So today, we're talking about ASP.NET, and we're talking about Azure. With Azure, you've got three options. We've got the websites, the cloud services, and the virtual machines. In this session, we'll focus on the websites and the cloud services. We're not going to really be talking too much about virtual machines, but I'll go ahead and give you guys a brief overview. For virtual machines, you can upload either Windows or Linux VHDs. For this crowd, you're probably going to be uploading Windows VHDs. And these are ideal for scenarios where you have existing servers on-prem and you're not interested in maintaining the hardware any longer. You can just upload it to Azure and we'll take care of all that for you. So from the Azure websites perspective, we're going to be using an image viewer application. And with the websites, they're a great opportunity to try Azure easily and quickly and also for free. You'll get 10 websites for free along with a SQL Azure database. And we'll take a look at your image viewer application. This is your demo app. It's an ASP.NET MVC app. It stores some metadata about your images in SQL Server. It uses EF code first to access that data, and it uses code first migrations in order to manage the schema of the database. So as your schema for the database evolves, all the changes are actually stored in source control as code along with your application itself. And we can see that the images are being stored on the local file system of this application as well. I've got this application running in Visual Studio right now. Like I said, it's a simple MVC app. You go ahead and do a Control F5. We'll take a look at the app. We'll check out a couple of the pictures that we have, and then we'll move on to the websites. All right, so I've got a few pictures loaded here for you guys. Here we can see a giant green roller coaster. Any guesses as to where this image was taken? No, it's Islands of Adventure, but that's a good guess. This is actually the Hulk. This is a great ride. All right, we've got a big lake with a cable system. That's right, the Orlando Water Sports Complex. All right, let's check out the next one. All right, so this is a giant structure that could potentially kill you. Any guesses as to where this one was? Yes, the Sky Coaster, that's right. All right, on to the last image. Now that I live in Seattle, it's a lot easier for me to cruise up to Alaska. So I enjoy going to Alaska, taking photos of the outdoors, also enjoy taking photos of my family. You can see a great image of my mother-in-law here. All right. So now, that's your image viewer application. Getting started with Azure websites is very easy. It's actually three simple steps. You create your website in the portal, you download the published profile, and then you publish your website. So now, I'll show you these three steps. I'm already logged into the portal. On the bottom, you can see the command bar. You'll click New. And here you can see those three things that I mentioned before, websites, cloud services, virtual machines, and a few other items as well. So for this, you'll click Website. You've got two options. You can either do a quick create, or you can do a create with database. Since your image viewer application is using a database, we'll select Create with Database. You'll give it a unique name. For this, I'll choose SH Tech Ed. When you see the green check mark, which is shown right here, you know you're good. On the database, you can choose to either create a SQL database or a MySQL database. For this audience, you'll choose SQL database. and you'll click Next. So now we're going to specify the SQL Server configuration, and on the next screen, I'll specify the admin username and password, which will be used to access this database. You're going to want to remember these, but if you do forget, you can change them, obviously. Okay, I'll go ahead and create mine. Click Next. And then we can see on the screen behind me with the progress bar that the website and linked database are being created. This will take just a minute. Okay, it's been created. And then the notification at the command bar lets me know that the website and the linked database were successfully created. So now we've finished step one, and I'm pretty sure that was under a minute. So now we're going to move on to step two, which is download your published profile. To do that, you'll click on the website, and you're brought to the dashboard. On the dashboard, you can get a quick overview of what's happening with your website and any linked resources that are associated with it. We'll actually take a closer look at this in a little bit, but to download the published profile, on the right-hand side, under Quick Glance, there's a link for Download Published Profile. You'll go ahead and click that link. You should save this published profile in your downloads folder. This profile is really just an XML file that we use, and I'll show you how you can use that published profile from within Visual Studio to publish your application. So now, right-click on your web project and select Publish. So here we can see a new publish experience that's available for Visual Studio 2012. One big thing that I want you guys to remember before you leave here is that this publish experience that I'm showing you is not only available in 2012, but it's also available for 2010. You can download it in our Azure bundle today. Here, you'll go ahead and click on the import button, and then browse out to the published profile. We'll automatically open up your downloads folder. Click OK. You can go ahead and validate the connection. When you see the green check mark, you know that all the settings are correct and you're ready to proceed. So in this case, my Azure subscription is configured to go to North Europe because I knew everybody would be hitting East US and West US. So I figured, hey, let me just go to Europe. No big deal. But the latency will be a little bit longer than what you would normally experience for East and West US. But all right, let's give it a second. This actually is taking a little bit longer than what it normally would, but it will go through. All right, so now, okay, actually what we can do, all right, there we go. We see the green check mark. All right, so flip over to the Settings tab. On this page, we're now showing databases that are a part of the web project. So we mentioned before that this project is using an EF Code First model. It's called SQL Image Context. And when you open the Publish dialog and went to the Settings tab, it was automatically detected. And now you can click on the dropdown to select the connection string which should be used at runtime when you publish the application. This connection string, it was contained inside the publish settings file which you downloaded, and that's the same one that we entered the admin username and password for. On the publish dialog, you can see there's two check marks. You use this connection string at runtime, and then another check mark for apply code first migrations. With code first, there's two ways that you can configure your migrations to be executed when the context is first accessed. You can either do that in code, or you can do that in web config. When you check this check mark, we're going to configure your EF code first migrations to be executed by modifying your web config on publish. You'll click Next. Now you see a preview tab. Go ahead and click Start Preview. And now it's contacting the remote server determining what all files have been published to it, and then comparing that to the source project. Pretty soon when this comes back, we'll see all the files that the project contains, and then for the value of action, you have three different options. There's add, there's update, and there's delete. So for this case, we can see that all the options, that the action values are all set to add because we've never published this application before. So let me go ahead and click publish. This is using WebDeploy under the covers. When you import that publish settings profile, there's also some FTP credentials there if you wanted to use FTP for one reason. And we can monitor the status of the publish in the output window. So we can see that now all the files are going through, and then the browser is automatically open to the destination once the publish has succeeded. In this case, it's now accessing that EF code first context for the first time. It's determining what all migrations need to be executed, and then that's automatically populating the schema of the database. One really good thing about the EF code first migrations is that you can publish your app and republish your app and republish your app without any problems. As your schema evolves, the migrations will help you move from one version to another one. Ooh. All right, so we received some type of error on this. I'm not sure. All right, not sure what went wrong here, but we'll find out. So one thing that I'm gonna do is modify my webconfig, and that guy's already set to off, which is kind of interesting. All right, let me rebuild it, and then we'll go ahead and publish one more time. All right, so the demo gods are not very happy with me today. This worked every single time that I tried this. That is for sure. Okay. All right, let me do the start preview. I've got another publish settings file that we can use if we've got some issues with this. But hopefully we'll go ahead and get this to work. It is going a lot slower than what I've seen before, though, which is kind of interesting. All right. What's that? Oh, yeah. So actually, wow, this is taking really long, actually. All right, let's try it one more time. All right, so hopefully all goes well, the error will go away, and then we'll be good. All right, I've got my fingers crossed. I think it's gonna work this time. All right, cool. All right, awesome, so we're there. Some type of glitch. I'm definitely gonna blame this on Azure. Let me go ahead and upload an image. You know, whenever I post any images of myself online, I've got one rule. You've probably got the same rule, that you know I have to look good. If other people don't look that good, that's okay, even better. And let me find where this image. Here we go. So I'll upload this image here. So now I've clicked the upload button, and the image has been uploaded successfully. And here is the image. So does anybody recognize anybody in this image here? Yes, we've got Phil Hack on the far right. We've got Jorge from Page Inspector. And then there's Vishal Joshi from the WebMatrix team. There's myself. And then there's Mads Christensen from the HTML and CSS. All right, so now we've successfully taken an existing ASP.NET app, published it to Azure, even ran into an issue, republished again. And I'm pretty sure that we could have fit all that within like 3 or 4 minutes, including the slight glitch. You know, I'm not sure if it gets a whole lot easier than this, you know, considering that the website and the database were published. You know, definitely seems very easy to me. Does this seem like something that you guys would be able to do? Yeah, exactly. And it's all free, so it's very easy to try it out. All right, cool. So those were the three steps for publishing to an Azure website. So now that we've got our application running in Azure, we could take a look at some of the services which Azure provides that we can leverage from either a website or a cloud service. We've got three types of data, three types of storage services. We've got the blob service, table service, and queue service. The blob service, you can kind of think about this as a file system in the cloud. You'll store files or, you know, streams of bytes in the cloud. They're composed of containers and blobs. You can think of a container as a folder, and you can think of a blob as a file. When you're creating your container, you can also specify whether the container or its blobs can be accessed publicly through HTTP or HTTPS. Every account can have many containers, and every container can have many blobs inside of it. One of the reasons why you might be interested in using blob service is that your Azure websites have a limited amount of hard drive space available to it. I think it's 1 gig. But with blob service, I think it's either 100 terabytes that you can get, or it's an unlimited amount of data. So after you publish your image viewer application and you receive, and then you start getting bombarded with images being uploaded, you might think to yourself, hey, let me switch over to start using blob service here, because I'm going to quickly run out of my 1 gig storage space. So let me show you how you can create a new storage account in the portal. You'll go back to the command bar where you created your website, and you'll click storage here. You've got one option, quick create. You'll give it a name. Once again, this also has to be unique, and you'll wait for the green check mark. You can pick what region it should be created in. If you had more than one subscription, you would create that. You would select which subscription should be used. And there's also a check mark for enable geo replication. So this is actually another really great reason to use blob service, is that your data is replicated within the data center itself three times on different hardware. So if the hardware that's storing your your files goes down, you'll have a backup on another set of hardware. And then if you check the check mark for enable geo replication, every time you save, every time you write to blob service, it actually will be replicated in an entirely different data center. So if there is some type of natural disaster in the data center which you used, you know that your data is still safe in a different data center. Okay, you'll go ahead and click create storage account. This will take just a second to be created. Okay, so the status went from creating to resolving. I've actually already created one. This actually is pretty quick to create, but there's no reason that we should just wait for it. So I've created one ahead of time. It's called Syedha Image Viewer West. When you access your blob service, you can specify whether you enable HTTP or HTTPS from any location. And then for writing to the blob service, you have a pair of keys, a primary key and a secondary key. You'll have to take one of these keys and use that to actually access or to write to your blob service. The reason why there's two is you'll start using your primary access key and then embed that within all your applications. And then if for some reason that key gets compromised, you can update your application to start using the secondary key. And then after all your updates have been rolled out, you can discard the first key. So in this case, I've already copied the keys and placed them into my web config. Let me show you what does this look like. So I've got an app setting. Here, I've created a setting that's called Image Viewer Connection String. An Azure storage connection string is contained of three parts. Whether the first part is whether you're going to use HTTP or HTTPS. The second part is the account name. And the third part is the account key. Those are the keys which I was just telling you guys about. All right, so I've already placed those into my web config. You can see I also have an app setting for use Azure, which is currently set to false. So let me flip that to true, and then I'll show you how does that actually impact the application. So when you upload an image in your image viewer, it will contact the admin controller, and the upload image action will be called. When the image viewer is created, it's passed in two things. It's passed in an image repository, and it's passed in an image saver. The image repository is responsible for writing out the metadata to the SQL Server or wherever else it might write it. And the image saver is responsible for saving the actual image itself. So in your application, you've got a custom dependency resolver. When the admin controller is created, it will look to see if use Azure is set. If use Azure is set, it will return the blob image saver. If use Azure is set to false, it'll just return the local image saver, which will just write it to the file system. All right, so let's quickly look at the local image saver. So here we've got a method for save image. All this really does is just write the image to a folder. It's called user images. Now let's look at the blob image saver. So here we also have a method, save image. And then a few things happen here. So the first thing is we'll get a reference to the images container. So here, in order to get the reference to the container, you'll create a client for the blob service. And then to create the container, we'll call this method, create if not exists. So here, I'm just passing in the container name. And if the container was not created, it will go ahead and create that for me. And then down here, you can see that you're also setting the permissions and you're enabling access to that container and all of its blobs. So I see public access type. Okay. So now I've got the reference to the container. I'm ready to upload a blob to it. So I create a reference to a new blob, open the file, and then say upload from stream. There's also an upload from file method. You could have picked either one. They're really the same thing. All right, and then after that, it returns a reference to that image, which has the URI for it. Okay. So now we've made the change, and what I want to do is republish this, and then we can see if blob service is actually being used or not. So here, I'll go ahead and do another preview, and this will show you that the publishing is incremental. We've kind of already seen this a little bit because we had that glitch, but the first time that we published, it published out the full set of web content for your application. But this time, we've only modified the web config. We haven't modified any other files. So I'm only expecting to see the web config and potentially the assembly if the timestamp has changed. Okay. All right, so we just see web config and the action is set to update. Let me go ahead and publish this out again. When the publish completes, the website will be opened automatically. So we can see now the website's being opened. And if you take a look at the browser, it is on azurewebsites.net. Okay. Before I upload another image, you know what, let me actually, I've got a zooming tool which I need to run. All right, so Dropbox, tools. All right, so let me run this, okay. All right, so now in the properties, if you take a look at the image which I first uploaded, it's under the same URL that my website is, shtech.azurewebsites.net, okay. That was when we were using the local image saver. So now let me go ahead and upload another image. And this time, this image should actually be stored in the blob storage. So let me you know what I'll do is I'll take this house picture and go ahead and upload that. All right, so now the image is being uploaded to my web server, and then it's actually being placed in Blob Storage. So we can see that the image has been uploaded. We can open it in full screen. And let's take a look where this URL is pointing to. So now we've got it. We've got the images being served out of Blob Storage. So another thing to keep in mind here, that these Blob Storage servers are optimized for static content, so you don't have to worry about cookies and all those sorts of things. And another thing about serving your content from the Blob service is that it doesn't take any of your own compute resources. So that's another really great benefit to the Blob service. All right, cool. So that was the Blob service. We've already seen the demo of the image viewer application running with Blob service. And now back to the other storage services that Azure is providing. So we also have table service, which is great for structured, non-relational data. So what that means is you can take entities and store them in table service. So for example, in this image viewer application, we're actually storing all the metadata about these images inside SQL Server. But if you wanted to, you could use table service to store that metadata instead of SQL Server. One of the interesting things about the table service is that it provides OData support out of the box. It's very easy to get started. And here we can see the structure of the table service. It's somewhat similar to the structure of Blob service as well. You've got an account. Every account can have many tables. And every table can have many entities. So in this case, if you are going to take the image viewer application and store it and store the metadata inside table service, you would just create a table for image information. And then the index and the image URL will just be stored as an entity in the table service. Okay, and then I've just got another example here for invoices, just to show you that we can have more than one table inside that account. Okay, the third storage option for Azure is the queue service. So the queue service is really great if you need to pass information from one machine to another machine. So for instance, you've got a t-shirt selling website. When your users log into your website and order a t-shirt, your website will place that order onto a queue, and then you've got some background processes that are running that will actually pull orders off the queue and then start processing them. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into the cloud services, but that's what's going to enable you to scale your applications really good. Okay. All right, so now we've got the structure of the queue service. So we can see that there's some patterns here. It's looking very similar to the structure which we've seen from table service and which we've also seen from the Blob service. So the queues, you've got an account, it can have many queues, and every queue can have several different items inside those queues that get pulled off and get processed. All right. So now, before we move on to the cloud service, let's take a closer look at the portal and what all can we do at the website itself, for the websites. Okay. So I went back to the portal, I drilled into my website, and here we can see a dashboard. So this dashboard is a quick overview of everything that is happening with your website and whatever linked resources it might have. So here, we can see a number of different things. Let me start unchecking these, and then we'll look at them. Okay. So since I just published this application, we're only going to see a very small amount of information here, but you can imagine how your website progresses over time. You can kind of gain some insight about the type of patterns of usage for your website. So we've got the CPU time, that's your compute cycles. the number of requests that are coming in, and then your data that's going out, your data that's going in, and then also if there's any HTTP errors, which we did see. So that was good, because on my previous demos, this was showing up as zero. So I'm glad we did get an error, so now we've got that. All right, so now we can look down here and get some more specific numbers as to what's happening. So for the file system storage, we can see we've got 1 gig of storage, which I'm consuming a few megs, and so on and so forth. And towards the bottom, we can see our linked resources. So here, if you had more than one database linked to your website, they would all show up here, and you can just drill into them. Another cool thing that I want to point out on this portal is the scale tab. So the Azure websites are a multi-tenant environment, but you can actually scale the number of instances that your websites are actually using. So here, what you can do with the shared capacity, you can either turn it up to one, you can have from one, you can turn it up to two, or even three instances for free. That's one way that your website can scale. And you can also put your website into reserved mode. So I said previously that the Azure websites are a multi-tenant environment, but if you go to reserved mode, and this is not part of the free offering, but if you go to reserved mode, then it wouldn't be a multi-tenant environment. It would be a reserved VM that only your account is running in, and then you would have a dedicated set of resources going to it. All right, so that's that. Okay, cool. All right, so that was the Azure websites overview. All right, so now let's move on to talk about the cloud services. We've said that cloud services are ideal for multi-tier applications. With cloud services, there's two types of roles which you can have. You can have a web role, and those are for your ASP.NET websites or any web services which you might have. They'll have IIS pre-installed and pre-configured. It's very easy to take a website or a web service and publish it to a web role. There's also a worker role. So a worker role will basically process, it will run background processes. So you can think of a worker role as a Windows service running in the cloud. So back to your t-shirt application. So you, for your t-shirt application, you would create a web role to serve your ASP.NET front end, and then you would create a worker role that would actually process all of the images, all of the orders off the queue. Now you might start off with one instance of each, but when Christmas time rolls around, you know you're gonna be receiving a lot of orders, so you're gonna wanna turn up those number of instances to ensure that you can handle all of the load appropriately. So some other differentiators between cloud services and Azure websites are that cloud services give you full access to the virtual machine. You can actually remote desktop into the machines to take a look at the configuration. You can set custom IIS settings. If your application requires prerequisites to be installed, you can install those prerequisites. These are all things which you wouldn't be able to do in a multi-tenant environment like the Azure websites. Another benefit is that you can actually have some advanced networking. And what I mean by advanced networking is if you've got a web or a worker role running in the cloud that needs to access any resources that are on-prem, there's a few different ways that you can set that up. You can either use Azure Connect, which will basically create a virtual private network between your Azure machines and your on-prem servers. And you can also use Service Bus to do that as well. So now, there was three steps to getting your application in the Azure websites. There's also three steps to get your application running in a cloud service. So let's take a look at those three steps. It's actually very similar to the website flow. You'll create your service project, you'll create your cloud service and your project, and then you'll download your published credentials, and then you'll publish your project. So let's take a look at this flow. I'm in the portal again. You'll click New. Now you'll select Cloud Service. You've got two choices, Quick Create or Custom Create. You can stick with Quick Create for now. You'll give it a name. You'll pick the subscription and location where you want it to be created. For this, I'll choose West US. And then you'll click Create Cloud Service. This actually is very fast. It's already been created. Okay, so now we can see that the cloud service has been created. That was step one. So now let's take a look at step two. You can right-click on your web project and then select Add Cloud Service Project. So for the cloud service project, it's actually a little different than just publishing a normal web project. We require this new project type because you can have multiple different roles and you want to publish them all at the same time. So that's why we have this. So you'll right-click and say Add Cloud Service Project. That will add a new project to your solution and then automatically associate your ASP.NET project as a web role. All right, now you can click Publish here. On this screen, we can see that we've got sign in to download credentials. This is a little bit different from the Azure websites in the sense that once you sign in and download your credentials, that actually bootstraps your entire machine and enables you to publish to any of your subscriptions. So I've actually already done that. This is a very pain-free process. You simply sign in, and then it will automatically download and bootstrap VS. And then when you come back to the publish dialog, you can select your subscription if you had more than one. So in this case, I'll choose subscription one, click next. And now on the next screen, we can see that I've got all the cloud service items showing up here. So I've got SH Tech Ed, that's one that I've created previously. And then I've got the new one, which I just created, the test 03. And we can also see whether you want to publish to your production or to your staging slot. So for the cloud services, you've got the two slots, production or staging. And the concept there is that you'll have your application in production, and then you'll publish updates to staging. You'll test the staging environment, make sure that everything's good to go, and then you can swap them. So that will ensure that you have a zero downtime, and then which will maximize the amount of orders that you get. And then towards the bottom of the screen, you can click Enable Remote Desktop for all roles. And there is also another checkbox, Enable Web Deploy, which will light up once I enable the remote desktop. Okay? So here, we can pick the username and password. This is what will be used to sign in for the remote desktop. Okay? Click OK. And then we can go ahead and publish this. If you choose to enable Web Deploy for all roles, a number of things will happen. When you publish your cloud service, Web Deploy will be installed on the VM, and then you can actually publish out from your web project immediately to that. So this is really good for development scenarios. I'll actually show you that. But let me go ahead and I'm gonna actually save this, but I'll cancel it. I'm not going to publish. This does take about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes to publish. So I've actually already published it. And let me just take you to the location. So in this case, let me go back, downloads, and go to where it's actually on my desktop. I've got, okay. All right, so here, now I have a shortcut for the application that's running as a cloud service. So if I zoom in to the URL, we can see that it ends with cloudapp.net. This is what lets me know that it's running as a cloud service instead of as an Azure website. All right, so that also, it was a little bit more work than the Azure websites, but it was also a very streamlined process. There wasn't a whole lot of gotchas here. It was very easy. So now, now we've actually just published our cloud service. So if you had a web role with a worker role, then that would show up here, and then they would be published out at the same time. All right, cool. So now let's take a look at some of the dashboard that will show up for your cloud services. This is somewhat similar to the Azure websites. On this screen, on my screen, you only see the compute that's available and the memory that's available, but all those same numbers that you saw for the Azure websites will show up here for the cloud services over more time. And then we also have the quick glance as well, which has the site URL. And after that, we can also check out the scale tab of this website. For the Azure websites, we could turn the scale up from 1 to 3. But for cloud services, on the website itself, I can actually choose to go ahead and scale this all the way up to 20 instances. We actually limit this to 20 on the website, but if you call in, you can actually get many more than 20. I think it goes into the thousands. But one reason we just limit it to 20 is to make sure that people don't accidentally scale up beyond what they really need. So for most applications, 20 is good. But if you did have a scenario where you needed thousands, we can do that. We do have people that are using thousands of instances. And then we also have an instances tab here where we can look at all the instances which are running, and then we can see what is their status, whether they're in a ready state or if they're being created or if there's any issues with it. All right, for this case, we've seen everything. So now, all right, so that was good. Let me just continue on. So we've already gone through those three steps. We've published out our cloud service, and I think we're actually a bit ahead on time. So what I'll do is we can take a quick look at some of the other items which are available in the portal. So let me go back and let's take a look at my storage. So here in my storage account, we've got a dashboard for the storage as well. These are not turned on by default, but you can turn those on. And we can see that I've got my blob endpoint, my table endpoint, and my queue endpoint. So these are the endpoints that will be used, and you can access these through HTTP or HTTPS, like we mentioned before. And then we get a quick view of what's the status of these services. So on this right-hand side, I can see that geo-replication is enabled and that the service is online and we're not having any issues with it currently. All right, so we can also go to the monitor tab, but like I said, that guy's not turned on by default. And here you can actually turn on your monitoring on the configure tab. So if you wanted the monitoring data to show up in the website, you can just turn these on here, and then after some time, those values will start showing up. Okay, so that was the storage accounts. And then we can take a look at the SQL databases that we have. So in this case, the database that I'm using should be this one. All right, so from here, we can drill into the database that the application is using, and we could actually get into the server on this side here. So if I drill into that server and then go to the configure tab, there is one thing that we should point out is when you create the SQL Azure databases, by default, other SQL Azure services will be able to access them. There was a checkbox when we created that database. But anybody that is external from that won't be able to access those databases. So for instance, if I took the connection string that I have and just tried to connect to it with SSMS, that wouldn't work. And that's actually by design. That's the firewall rules. If you want to enable any other IP addresses to access those databases, this is where you would make that configuration. For instance, if I wanted anybody to be able to access it, I can start with 0000 and then go to 255, 255, 255. And then go ahead and save that. And then it takes a few minutes to propagate through. But after it propagates, then I'd be able to connect to it with SSMS. All right, so that was that. And then there was one thing. All right, so that was the services. Let me actually go back to the websites. I think there was another item that I wanted to show you guys. We already looked at the scaling. Okay, we've got those. Okay, all right. We're actually running a little bit ahead, but that gives us a little bit more time for the Q&A. One thing that they have asked is that if you have a question, just step up to the mics. And then when you actually ask the question, I will repeat it, because the recording systems don't have these mics fed into them. Any questions about the websites or the cloud services? All right, there's got to be some questions out there. All right, here we go.
I don't think I need the mic. You can hear me, too. My question is, like, the website you showed us for images, can we upload a complete application, like publish in Azure with the database and everything? How will the local database play in that scenario? Like, will it stay on our server or?
Okay, so the question is, how can we upload a website with a database?
Yeah, like, I have a web application, complete application,
sure,
which capture, right, and it's running on a local database on my computer. And I want to publish into Azure.
Okay, I see what you're saying, yeah. So for this case, I actually used, so the question was, how can I take an existing application that uses a website and a database and just publish that to an Azure website? So in this case, I actually used EF Code First, and I used the Code First migrations to manage the schema of that database. If you had any data that was associated with that database, you can actually, you can place that inside your migrations, and then that would populate the database on the server. And one thing that we're actually working on that hasn't been enabled in this build is a checkbox for update database. So in that scenario, if you're not using code first, but you just have a connection string inside your web config, we actually will reverse engineer your source database and then publish that incrementally to your SQL Azure server. Yeah, so the question was, we had a connection string, and then can I connect to it with SSMS? So that's exactly what I was talking about over here. If you take that connection string by default and put it into SSMS, you won't be able to connect to it due to firewall rules, but that's where you can go back to the SQL database, and then you can drill into the server itself, and then on the configure tab, that's where you would set up your firewall rules. That's what I did before for a different one. But here you can set up your firewall rules to say which IPs are allowed. So that's a good question. All right.
In the 10 free websites you're allowed, are there any limits on what you can put in storage in terms of blobs, in terms of table storage? Is there a constraint to maximum size you can use?
Okay, yeah. So the question was the 10 free websites and what do we get for free from blob storage and table storage and queues? The 10 free websites are a free offering, so you'll get 10 free websites and one SQL database for free, and I think that's free up for a year. There's also a program that we have available that will make blob storage, that will make the storage services available for 90 days as well as cloud services. And I don't think that there's a free offering beyond the 90 days for blob service and all that. Yep. Right. But you know, from a perspective of like limitations of size, I think the blob service goes all the way up to 100 terabytes.
Can I ask one more?
Sure.
Do the websites support templates such as Orchard and things like that? Can I create an Orchard website and upload that?
You can. Yeah, that's actually a good question. So. The question was, can I create a website from a template? So in this case, you'll go to websites, you'll click new, and then from website, we saw there was three options, quick create, create with database, and I chose create with database for this option, but you could also choose create from gallery. So we've got a web gallery where you can select whatever applications that you want. So for example, you actually mentioned Orchard. Can I create an Orchard account, an Orchard app? So in this case, you can create an Orchard app from the gallery and then download it. Yep, that's a great question. Thank you. When you sign in to Azure, on the right-hand corner, you would go into your account, and then there's a link for preview features. You would click on that link for preview features, and then scroll down to websites, and then you can enable it for yourself. Yep, that's right. Okay, cool. That's a great question. All right. Okay, Rich is asking about the staging and if it is a duplicate of all your application's code, and then how does it impact you from a cost perspective? So from a code perspective, if your cloud service project had more than one web or worker role, when you publish it to your staging slot, it'll be basically a replica of everything that you had inside that production slot. From a cost perspective, you would be paying for all the resources on production and on staging. So yeah, that's a very good question. So if you had a production website that was out there and then you weren't actively testing your staging, you could actually turn off or even undeploy those applications to ensure that you're not being charged for resources which you're not consuming. That's a great question. All right, we got another one here.
Yeah, what kind of session management do you employ on your various instances there, and is it configurable at all?
Session management, so in what aspect?
Well, in terms of if I deploy 50 sites.
Okay, so if you deploy 50 sites. Okay, so this is what, so you're referring to the cloud services then?
Right.
Right, okay, cool. All right, so for cloud services, they have a few different ways that you can actually manage upgrading your application. So for instance, if you've got 10 instances that are running in the cloud, and then you publish out a new version, you could either do what's called a VIP swap. So in that case, you'll publish to production, and then you'll publish to staging, and then you'll say, hey, I want to swap these, and then they would just be swapped all at once. But there's also another way to deploy your services that actually does, that performs a rolling upgrade. And every instance is inside what's called an upgrade domain. These upgrade domains will ensure that when an instance comes down, that we bring it up in a rolling fashion to where none of your sites are taken down offline. It's actually kind of detailed. If you've got any questions about that, I will be having a chalk talk at 6 down in the Learning Center. We can get into more details there.
Just to follow on what he was saying, like we set up a web farm and we have, you know, you can use cache, services to manage cache across mm-hmm. many different instances. So in a web farm situation, right. How can you manage cache across all, multiple instances?
Mm-hmm. Right, so for that case, you could either use the SQL Server caching, or Azure actually has a caching service as well that you could leverage, right?
So you would have to do something out of the
yes,
box and deploy
that's right.
it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that actually is a good question. That's another kind of distinction between the cloud services and the Azure websites. So cloud services are stateless, and you want to make sure that you're not writing to the memory or to the local file system of the cloud services. We actually have some magic that's going on in the Azure websites. When you write to a file, it's not actually writing to that file, it's writing to a shared location, and all of your instances would be talking to that. I'm not sure what the plan is for cloud services to leverage those features as well. But I think it's on the horizon, but don't quote me on that. All right, anybody else? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
So the question is more relating to cost. They've got some servers, and they're not interested in maintaining those servers over time, and he's interested in bringing it to Azure. So we've actually done some studies about cost for running servers on-prem versus running servers in Azure. If you want, come and talk to me at the Chalk Talk, and then I can point you to those resources to kind of... The Chalk Talk will be down in the South Hall B in the Learning Center, right? Yep, yeah. Please come and find me. Okay. All right, anybody else out there? All right, one thing that... let's go ahead and close it up, I guess, but I definitely will be hanging around for the next 15 minutes if you want to come up and ask me one-on-one. But we've got some action items here for you guys. You got to sign up for Azure, try out our free offering, publish your site, and then the most important thing, have fun while you guys are here in Orlando. If you don't do one of my three things, try out one of your own. And before you leave, I want to let you know that on Wednesday night at 6:30, the ASP.NET team will be meeting at a pizzeria not that far from here. So go to nerddinner.com. And we would love to meet you guys and to get some feedback in person. This is a rare opportunity that you can meet the product teams and to give direct feedback. You know, we're very interested in hearing what you guys have to say. I want to say thanks to everybody that came out, and I hope you have a great conference and a great time.